Welcome to episode 13 of the Fitness Mindset podcast. Today I am joined by Andrew Tracy, who is a coach. He's a frequent contributor to Men's Health magazine, and he's also a car park workout creator. Now, Andrew, would you say that's probably a good title for you?
Yeah, why not? That makes sense. It's very succinct.
Give the listeners a better idea of what you actually do then, Andrew, and what you're about.
Okay, so previously I was a personal trainer. I got into the fitness industry pretty much straight out of school. I'm 30 now, so a while back, and I kind of fell out of love with it working in a commercial environment. Didn't really want to go to seminars or kind of further my career or my education anymore. And I kind of decided that I loved being involved in fitness more than I loved making a wage out of it. So I wanted to go into kind of other arenas professionally so I could keep the love for fitness, if that makes sense. And I ended up working in the events industry where I currently run a company building kind of big superstructures for all sorts of events all over the country. But I still coach at Farm Fitness. I still do remote programming, as you said, contribute to Men's Health and Men's Fitness and various other sort of publications. In terms of my actual training, because I'm on the road so much, I don't have access to a gym. My ethos is kind of like, you are not your gym membership, so don't get pegged down in thinking that your fitness needs to revolve around being in a gym 4 or 5 times a week. And the majority of the time, I actually train in service station car parks, kind of wherever I am, or even now when I am at home and I do have access to a gym, I would literally just train in the garden or in the garage. Obviously, people aren't going to be able to see, but you can. This is where we are now. We're in a glorious Northern England service station, and this is the sort of place that would be my playground.
Cool. So what makes the sort of the a good type of car park to train in? What are the main requirements then?
That's a good question. Qualifying criteria. Obviously not being too busy is handy. I need to get double parked so I can park and have my own little sort of 5x4 space to throw a barbell around in without being in anyone's way. Other than that, I'm not particularly too fast. Actually, I'll tell you what, one little bugbear I do have is if it's on too much of a camber, like it's too hilly, it can make it really difficult to do any sort of ollie lifts or anything like that. You're constantly falling either backwards or like you're in a huge amount of like dorsiflexion doing anything. But really that is just nitpicking. By the time you're out in a, how did I describe it yesterday? Like a glass littered service station car park, you really do stop worrying about much of anything. Yeah, it's beggars can't be choosers really. So
yeah, so I'm people not really who, too
bothered. I do have.
Yeah. No, carry on.
I do have particular car parks that I do like. If we do some jobs regularly, there's like certain hotels I think, oh, I can't wait to get back there. That's got a great car park.
Like Holiday Inn.
But generally speaking, I'm not really too fast. If it's winter, just one with like good lighting so I can get some decent like Instagram content.
Absolutely.
Again, I'm not really, by the time it sort of rolls around to 8, 9 o'clock at night, generally the last thing I'm thinking about is recording the video for Instagram.
I mean, your content it's really good, really inspiring. What made you decide to start, like, actually, because you basically document what you do, which is really cool. You just do the workouts, you just film it, and then you just upload it. So what made you start thinking, oh, I actually want to share this with people, I think it could be helpful for people?
I think it's mostly because initially for me, like, I didn't train for a while when I first kind of got into this industry, just because, like most people, I was like, look, I don't have time. I'm up at 5 o'clock in the morning. If I go home at all, I'm not home till 9, 10 o'clock at night. Other than that, I'm going to be staying in a hotel. And like, fitness just isn't something that I can fit in. And there wasn't really like an epiphany or anything like that. I just was like, man, I've just got to train. Like, I just miss it so much. And I kind of think, as I started doing more and more, I think the kind of the, no, this sounds a bit cheesy and a bit cliche, but the coach in me from years of kind of PTing and coaching was like, dude, you have to kind of share this, because there's people out there that are possibly in the same situation but don't have the fitness background that you do, that could possibly benefit from this stuff. And I kind of started putting stuff out on my Instagram and got a good response, and I think it sort of snowballed from there.
100%. Yeah, that's the thing, because it's so simple. And I think people don't realise just how simple it is to train, that you just don't need that much equipment. It's not half as fancy as people make out to be. And I think that's why your content in particular is particularly helpful for people. So do you have any advice for someone who trains in the gym a little bit, they haven't really got much momentum, they've maybe got a programme, they're not really enjoying it. What would you say for someone who's trying to start their fitness journey and trying to start their program to make it more interesting?
I think to make it more interesting, this is kind of where I think training and nutrition sort of cross over, or maybe even life cross over, because for me it's about doing a fair share of the stuff you kind of don't want to do but is necessary, the stuff that you know you have to do, and then a big heaping of the stuff that you want to do, the stuff that keeps you interested. But at the end of the day, with fitness, there's so many different ways to skin a cat, that just find the stuff that you love and find the stuff that you can stick to. And I think most people, the initial barrier for entry is the hardest part. Once they're actually into anything, it can be anything, once they're into a spin class, they're into, you know, bounce, literally anything, and they start to understand how it feels and understand how exercise makes your body feel, I think that is kind of almost then like a gateway drug. So initially, just finding the thing that you enjoy and is sustainable for you and makes you want to go back for more. And everybody, I think people get a little bit intimidated because everybody has a different level of what that is. Like, for me, like, I wasn't going to train tonight, and now literally just like flashing outside the car park to you, I was like, oh, actually, you know, I could probably go and get something in because I enjoy it. And maybe from the outside, that could actually be off-putting to some people. If they see a certain level of fitness, they think, Christ, is that what exercise is? Like, bombing a 100-kilo barbell, like, into a car park and, like, swearing and... And it's not. Yeah, that's just me. I think it's literally just a case of finding the stuff that's enjoyable for you, that's going to get you past that initial barrier for entry, and then incrementally moving up from there and finding what you love within that and just exploring it. I think it's Ross Edgley that says fitness is a journey everyone should start, but nobody should finish. So don't get pegged into the one thing you're doing. Literally explore, because you'll find other stuff you love within that. Like, I was speaking to people just Sunday, just being at an event, and they kind of started out doing like grit and you know, like Les Mills type classes and stuff like that, and they'd found CrossFit through those coaches. And there were people that you wouldn't necessarily think of as kind of type A exercisers, but now they're like smashing all these benchmark CrossFit watts, and it is you know, like housewives and nans and stuff like that. But because they've looked outside the box, or inside the box, or something else they love within that context of exercise. Yeah, so literally, initially, just find something that you can do, like day after day after day, that doesn't put you off. Something that you're excited to go back to and it's not a chore.
100%. And I like what you said about how it kind of evolves what motivates people. So like you say, people can start doing grit and then they can start actually doing some more lifting in the gym, some more stuff on their own. And you were actually doing strongman competitions not so long ago, is that right? And then now you're doing more CrossFit training. So what made that transition for you? Yeah. What made you decide to move into CrossFit a bit more?
I think the functional training, for me, I've been training so long, I've been training like literally pre-CrossFit. So stuff that you would call CrossFit now was just exercise.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of incorporated the more, the higher intensity functional stuff, and we do a lot of that at Farm Fitness, albeit more low skill and more accessible. I really love CrossFit. I love what it's done for the fitness industry because it's very easy to bash. It's very like on vogue, very fashionable to bash CrossFit, but you cannot speak highly enough of what it's done for the fitness industry. It's literally a case of the tide raises all ships. And I speak to guys all the time. They're working like strength and conditioning gyms as PTs and coaches, and they'll talk badly at CrossFit. And I'm like, dude, you would not have a job if it wasn't for CrossFit. Your gym would not exist. Like, none of this kit. You can say goodbye to Bulldog. You can say goodbye to Beaver Fit, to Rogue. All of this stuff that is now in commercial gyms is nowhere without CrossFit. The reason I'm leaning more towards actual CrossFit now is because I'm doing a fairly CrossFit-based competition. And it's literally because it was something I was asked to do. And I kind of liked seeing how far I can take the whole you are not your gym membership thing. Like, it's one thing to kind of get in kind of okay shape, like have a decent rig and low body fat whilst training in car parks. But for me now, it's like I'm kind of experimenting with how far can I take that without stepping foot in a gym or a CrossFit box. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, as you said, I did do a strongman competition. I didn't do terribly well. I'm like 75-80 kilos soaking wet. I think I was literally half the weight of the guy who won. I didn't lose, so not too bad. And you know, for a guy who trains, I can remember the last few training sessions I got in before the comp, it was like raining. I was in the back lorry park of a Butlin's holiday park, like doing an event there, just like 10 o'clock at night with this rickety 45 kilo dumbbell that I bought off some guy on eBay. And it's like pressing this thing up in the air. And, yeah, and it was just like so late at night and that. And there's times that I think like, why, like, what are you doing? Like, this is so unnecessary. But I just enjoy it so much, and I enjoy seeing how far I can take it without having to step foot in the gym, or without having to make my life, it may seem like my life revolves around fitness because that's kind of what my Instagram page is geared towards, but really it's an hour out of my day sort of tops.
100%. Yeah. People don't really see that they see social media content and that it looks that way, but actually people have normal lives. And people aren't motivated all the time. And I think that's a bit of a fallacy that people think that they are. So talk a little bit about when you're really just not motivated, can't be bothered at all. Or maybe you don't. Maybe you're motivated all the time. I don't know.
I kind of have a little philosophy on motivation is that I think people confuse motivation and enthusiasm a lot. Mm-hmm. So they'll see someone who's very enthusiastic and they'll think, I wish I could be that motivated. Where in fact, that person is just enthusiastic. That's just their outward demeanor towards any given task. Whereas this is what I say to people. You're not motivated. Well, you might be. I don't know. Some people might be. But generally speaking, especially in my industry, because it's really hard, but you're not motivated to get out of bed and go to work in the morning. Like, you don't wake up like, oh man, yeah, brilliant, another day, another dollar. You just like, I've got to pay my rent, my council tax, my bills. Like, that is your motivation. the work is just a means to an end. And for me, with training, as much as I love training, I am enthusiastic towards it. If you're feeling not motivated, and by that I mean not enthusiastic towards it, just literally look at it as a means to an end. Like, I'm not doing it because I do love it. I'm a bad example because I do genuinely enjoy training, but on the nights when I don't want to and I look at what's on the slate, it's like, okay, I don't feel enthusiastic towards doing this training whatsoever right now, but if I want X, I have to do Y. And it's like that with most things in life, and fitness is no different. I think what confuses people is that they possibly see people like us who are presenting a certain because in a way it's our social duty to, with the platform we're given, to be a certain level of enthusiasm towards it, to hopefully enthuse other people. But I think for some people that can almost demotivate them, because they end up thinking, like, man, I wish I was motivated like that. Whereas, in fact, we're just enthusiastic at that given moment in time.
100%. So some people are enthusiastic about knitting, so they're motivated to sit in front of the TV and knit, but we're not.
Exactly. But those same people, though, there's going to be nights where, you know, Sid's like, look, Ethel, what are you doing? Like, put down the knitting needle. And she's going to be like, yeah, but I've got to knit this jumper.
Got to do it. Got to get it done.
Simple as that. I've got to get it. If you look, Sid, if you want this hat,
that's it.
This is what's got to be done. You need to pipe down.
Yeah.
And I need to knit.
Exactly.
You know, she's not feeling particularly enthusiastic towards the task, but she's motivated to do this hat.
it's just as silly as that is,
it's the same thing.
100%. So basically, if you're not motivated, knit the hat, and that would be the trick, basically.
Then you will be put the hat on, and you will be instantly motivated, and from that moment forth, that's your motivation hat. I think that's what we just got from that, isn't it?
That is 100%. I think if that's made into a motivational quote for Instagram, I think it could go viral as well.
Yes, and now also everybody knows why I wear a hat all the time.
It's because you knitted it. Talk to me about...
It's because I knitted it, yeah.
So talk to me about your nutrition on the road then. So obviously you've got to keep yourself fueled, you have quite a physically demanding job. How do you keep it all balanced with your nutrition?
Tricky question. As it, like, I have a huge expenditure. So in a way, that's quite fortunate, because it allows a lot of leeway. That being said, the easiest thing for me to show you is what I do in times when I'm trying to reduce body fat slightly or control my caloric intake. In terms of being on the road, you just have to kind of concede that you're not going to do anything optimally. And again, this is the same as the training. People see, oh, I can't go to the gym, that's it, I just don't do fitness anymore. And it's the same thing with nutrition. If you're on the road and you're staying in kind of budget hotels all the time, a lot of people think, well, that's it, I can't eat well.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's just about looking at it in a slightly different context and not shooting for optimal, but shooting for optimal in your situation. So the majority of my diet, sort of 70, 80, 90%, some days if I'm feeling good, will consist of lean meats, tons of fruit. Like, I'm a huge lover of fruit. I think it's just an incredibly reliable carb source that actually tastes like a lot better than vegetables, high micronutrient profile, readily available energy. And you can just buy it fresh every single day. It takes no preparation. Like, you just got to peel a banana. And I think this stuff, although I'm probably at the extreme end of the spectrum where I literally, like, there's a kettle in this room right now. That is the full extent of my cooking apparatus. There's a kettle. So I'm at the really extreme end. But I think what a lot of people do is they try and overreach too quickly. And they assume that, okay, I'm going to eat well now, so all I'm going to eat is, you know, completely organic, free-range, lean meats. You know, I'm going to live on quinoa and salad, and that's it. And they go so far outside of what they've been doing their entire life that it's impossible for them to sustain. There are obviously people that can do that, and some people that need to take that leap. But for me, for most people, I would say the best thing to do is look at what you do now autonomously, even if that has got you into a bad position, like, you know, you're overweight, etc. Look at what you do now off your own back, and look at how you can make small changes within that that fit your lifestyle and fit what's available to you in terms of time constraints and financially, and just make small tweaks one at a time. And that's literally all I do. If I'm looking at body fat, I'm just like, where can I make slightly better choices throughout the day? I'm a big believer in intermittent fasting, literally just because I like to eat huge meals in the evening. I don't think there's anything amazingly special about intermittent fasting. Obviously, there's tons of research benefits, but for me, it's just about kind of parlaying all my calories towards the end of the day, so I can just have one or two big meals around my training rather than spreading it out. I'm also a big believer, or this is a fact, that you can't earn calories. So if you eat something earlier on in the day that perhaps you shouldn't have, and you get to the end of the day and you're still hungry, you know, your choices are either go to bed hungry or eat more. Whereas if you kind of try and leave the majority of the calories towards the end of the day, it's much more difficult to do that. But I eat a lot of... I try and steer away from overly processed, ready-cooked meats, not because I see any particular problem with those. Obviously, they're not ideal, but because I just don't think they taste too good. I think if you're on the road and you're looking for convenience, don't let people food shame you into thinking that your food choices are crap if you've got to eat something out of the tin or out of the packet. Sometimes it's just the way it is, and you're always going to get people to say, you know, you should prepare better, or you should do this, or you should do that, but everybody lives a different life, and I think everyone has to run their own race, so just do the best you can contextually to your situation.
100%. So do you think that people get a little bit confused because there is those massive extremes in industry? So people do think they have to make extreme choices themselves?
Yeah, massively. I think it's for two big reasons mainly. One is that extremes sell. You know, nobody wants to hear that if you literally just eat the same diet you're eating right now, but just eat a third less at every single meal, you're going to lose weight. Like, nobody wants to hear that because it's not very sexy. It's not a silver bullet. It's almost a chore, even though it's exactly what you're doing right now. But we kind of live in this highly marketed society where everyone's like, no, there's got to be something else. There's got to be a hack. There's got to be something I can take or something I can take out, or I've got an intolerance to something. And it's that sells. And people, unfortunately, will, whether they're doing it knowingly because they're just shysters, or whether they're just not educated enough, that sells. So people will play on it. And I think the other thing, the second thing, is people are immensely tribal and kind of seek belonging. And I think because food is something we all do every day, it's such a huge component of just being alive, that it's something people take really seriously, and it's something where people seek solace and they kind of find their place in the world in their diet, which is so, if you're kind of moderate, that is so weird to get your head around. Somebody could be so obsessed with their diet that they will offer to fight you on the internet that you're like, okay, it's just rice, okay, calm down. But people will, because they're tribal, and they, you know, you get that confirmation bias where keto people will only talk to other people who do keto unless it's to go and argue with somebody someone else. And it kind of looked like we were moving towards a good place where people were kind of just a little bit more calorie conscious and just becoming mindful. But even then, that pendulum swung so far now that 100%. There's like a cult of flexible dieters that, like, if you eat something green, they want to shame you for that. Like, dude, you could be eating a donut, and you're like, I just want to have this salad.
Absolutely. And that's just so not helpful for people who are just trying to get a bit better. People to say, oh, you could eat all this, or you could eat, I don't know, marshmallows. It's the same as, like, I don't know, like this amount of carrots. It's just not helpful for people. Like, why do you think that people get so obsessed with their particular diet and then they want to change other people's viewpoints on it?
I think literally just because that kind of tribalism, and people have become zealots. Myself the same, probably would have considered myself a part of. Some of those people have become so zealoted that they're like militant, kind of like militant agnostics, who will now see it as their duty to argue that, this diet doesn't work, but it only works because of calorie deficit, and this diet only works because of calorie deficit. And yeah, like 99% of the time they're right, but who cares? Like, you don't have to show up to every argument you're invited to. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's the tribalism thing, though. It literally is just a case of people like to find their place in the world, whatever that be, and then, you know, get on that hill and defend the flag. If you're fairly lean, sort of laid back, it can seem very strange. You're probably the same as me, where you're just like, you'll see people arguing with people they don't know over things that don't matter to them. And you're like, do you realise how much energy you're spending on this right now?
That's what I mean. It's like, it's fighting fire with fire. And I wonder sometimes if social media helps or hinders the fitness industry, because there's more information, there's a wealth of information, but there's now more confusion. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's very double-edged sword, isn't it? I think, like you say, there's much more information, which equals much more confusion, but at the same time, it's much less streamlined now. So if you want to, you can go out and seek further information. You're not just limited to what's in a magazine or that sort of thing. You can go out. But then, as I said before about confirmation bias, that can also be a bad thing, because if you start reading that, you know, the ketogenic diet, the paleolithic diet is amazing, and your friends told you about all these benefits, and you type #paleo into Instagram, you're only going to find people who already agree with the stance you're starting to take already. So it is a double-edged sword, and I know people like to get down on social media, and there's a whole like plethora of maybe older coaches who want to label, you know, anyone who puts out any sort of content on Instagram as an Instagram coach, but there's crap trainers in gyms who have never been on Instagram, and as much bad as there is on social media, there's also good. And once upon a time, what was fitness? What was your kind of go-to for information on fitness before social media? Without actually going to a trainer in the gym, you had magazines, and magazines are no different to social media. It's just trainers contributing and offering their own opinion, be that right or wrong or somewhere in between. It really is no different. There's maybe just more information, which equals more confusion, but there are also more answers.
100%. So, like, I have to agree in that with social media, you can kind of get in your own little bubble, and it can kind of almost sort of like spiral out. If you want to,
it warps your reality, doesn't it?
Well, totally, because then all you see on your feed is something that is strong with your beliefs, and then it fuels the fire. So I think that's really interesting you bringing up that point. So I've got a few quick fire questions to round it up. So if you could choose anywhere to have a workout in the world, any setting, where would it be?
Oh, I don't know why this is popping into my head, because it's something I've never even thought about before, but as you said it, it just popped up. It's on one of the big buildings in Dubai. It's always in photo shoots. So it's like a helipad. I think there's quite famous pictures of guys playing tennis on there.
Yeah.
I don't even know why that's just popped into my head, because I've never given that place a sort of second thought in my life. I suppose I'm sort of really transient with it. I don't really care where I train, so it's not. Let's just say there's
some open really space.
Cool gyms I'd love to go to. but that would be cool. But literally just for the gram, just for the content.
Just for the content. If it's exactly, got good lighting as well.
for me personally, like, that would be no different to like this Knutsford services car park, really, in terms of the work I would do, other than the fact I'd probably get some, like, much better photos.
Okay, so what's the best workout you've ever had?
Best workout I've ever had? I don't know. There's so many. There's like benchmark workouts that I absolutely love. It depends what you mean by best. Like, some
it's however you want to interpret it.
They're memorable. They've left scars in my heart.
Okay. So last one. What is the weirdest place you've ever done a workout?
I don't know, probably everywhere I train is probably weird to most people. Hold on, my brother's in the room, let me just ask it for me. He trains for me. What's the weirdest place you've ever worked out, would you say? Weirdest. I think he's got something.
When we were
at home, we had a family
in the old Dutch farm.
That old Dutch farm? No. My new home. Oh, the old, like, recreation centre place. It was, like, burnt down. Yeah, we did, like, a workout, and this old... It was, like, an older, like, what do you call it? Not a gentleman's club, like a council working room's club.
Yeah.
But it'd been, like, burnt down. And it was just, like, all bombed out and graffitied, and we just trained there. That was odd. That was really weird.
Okay.
I don't know why. There was, like, a football field right next to it as well that would have been just much
a bit more
convenient to train
in.
Yeah, just every car park as well. Is a weird place. We were in gridlock traffic the other week, and it was kind of this point where I was like, we're on the M6 or the M1, I can't remember which, and I was like, I was looking at traffic and I was thinking, if it looks like it's going to take ages to clear, I'm going to train here. Like, I'm just going to train on the M6. Literally, just so I could say, where's the weirdest place I've ever trained? It's on the M6. But it wasn't to be, and the traffic cleared up, and we got in our way, annoyingly.
Okay. Last one, I promise. You're quite a fan of takeaway pizza, and what would you say is a good marker for a good takeaway pizza?
My brother's laughing because he knows exactly where I'm about to go with this.
I think I do too.
Right. Yeah. So this is my method. You get on Just Eat or you get on Hungry House or whatever your sort of takeaway or Yelp, whatever it is, and you search for pizza places that are close enough to deliver to you, and then you arrange them by ratings from lowest to highest. Anything above a 2-star is a no-go. So you need to stay below 2 stars.
That's hygiene, right?
I don't know. I guess it's an all. I try not to think about that. It's probably the hygiene, I think. Stay as low as you can. And my theory on this is pizza, so they haven't got time to wash up and stuff. So the council health inspectors come and they're like, I think I just saw a rat. And they're like, it doesn't matter, we're doing this dough right now. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. Worry about the product. That's what's important. So we just literally, anywhere new we go,
And because we go to the same sort of places regularly for the last few years, we will find the lowest rated pizza place and we will try it. And we have never been let down. Never been let down. Well, I think we've had like mild food poisoning before, but other than that, like people don't do this, like don't go out and like.
That was me being mean, asking as the last question after you talked about nutrition, but I think that wraps it up quite well. And I mean, you've got a great ethos. If you want to leave your handles on Instagram, of your Instagram or anything else, so that people can give you a follow, because your workouts are pretty awesome, so that people can give them a go. If you want to just...
Yeah, so I am on Instagram. I'm at theandrew.tracy, T-R-A-C-E-Y. And my website is literally youarenotyourgymmembership.com. And there's a couple of free programs on there, stuff that you can do at home, stuff you can do in the gym that's very basic and bare bones. Loads of free programs that you can get into there. And the same on my Instagram, which I post pretty much kind of 80 to 90% of every workout I do and try and sort of contextualize it as to why I've done it. And it's all really basic stuff. Obviously, I can only train with what I can fit in the back of a van. So it's nothing people can't do in their garden and stuff like that if they're willing.
100%. No, they're really, really, really good workouts and really simple and really effective. So highly recommend you give them a download. So, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your knowledge and wisdom. I'm going to wrap it up there. So thank you very much for listening.